Welcome back, Legal Eagles. Today we're taking a deep dive into a fascinating Supreme Court case from 1884, Hurtado v. California.
Buckle up, because this one's a doozy.
We've got the original case brief and all the juicy opinions laid out before us, so what's the big picture here? Why should we care about this case from over a century ago?
Well, it's not just about some dusty old legal document. Hurtado v. California gets to the heart of a debate that's still raging today. How do we balance individual rights with the power of the states?
Okay, I'm intrigued. Set the stage for us. What exactly went down in this case?
All right, so we've got Joseph Hurtado, convicted of murder in California and sentenced to death. Pretty serious stuff, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
But here's the twist. He was convicted based on an information, basically a formal accusation from the district attorney. No grand jury indictment.
Wait, hold on. You can just skip the whole grand jury thing for a murder trial? That doesn't sound right.
That's exactly what Hurtado argued. He claimed that being convicted without a grand jury indictment violated his 14th Amendment right to due process of law.
Ah, the 14th Amendment. Due process. We hear these phrases thrown around all the time, but what do they actually mean?
You're hitting on something really important. Due process is one of those foundational concepts that underpins our entire legal system. The 14th Amendment says that no state can deprive someone of life, liberty, or property without due process of law.
So it's like a safeguard against the government just, you know, running roughshod over our rights.
Exactly. Due process is meant to ensure fairness, to prevent the government from acting arbitrarily or unjustly. It's all about making sure the government follows proper procedures, especially when someone's life or liberty is at stake.
So back to Hurtado. He took this due process argument all the way to the Supreme Court. What happened? Did they side with him?
Well, this is where things get really interesting. In a majority opinion penned by Justice Matthews, the court ruled against Hurtado. They sided with the state.
They said it was okay to skip the grand jury indictment, even in a murder case.
Yes. Justice Matthews argued that the 14th Amendment doesn't specifically require states to use grand jury indictments for all felonies. He emphasized that due process of law isn't about rigidly adhering to one set of procedures. It's more about ensuring fairness in the overall process.
So different states could have slightly different procedures, as long as they're still fundamentally fair.
You got it. Justice Matthews believed that the information process used in California, where a judge reviews the evidence before trial, provided sufficient protection for Hurtado's rights. He argued that this process was fundamentally fair, even without a grand jury indictment.
Sounds like a pretty big win for the states, giving them some flexibility in how they run their courts.
Right, but not everyone agreed with this decision. In fact, there was a fiery dissent in this case written by Justice Harlan, and boy, did he have some strong words.
Okay, I'm sensing some drama here. Lay it on me. What was Justice Harlan's beef with the majority's ruling?
Justice Harlan was absolutely adamant that the right to a grand jury indictment, especially for a capital crime like murder, is a cornerstone of individual liberty. He saw it as a right deeply ingrained in our legal heritage, going all the way back to English common law.
He's basically saying you can't just toss aside centuries of legal tradition in the name of flexibility.
Exactly. Justice Harlan was deeply worried that allowing states to bypass the grand jury step would make it easier for individuals to be wrongly accused. He saw the grand jury as a vital check on the government's power, protecting people from potentially arbitrary or politically motivated prosecutions.
So you got this fundamental clash between two visions of justice. Justice Matthews arguing for flexibility and adaptability in the law, and Justice Harlan emphasizing the importance of upholding certain core rights that shouldn't be compromised.
You nailed it. And to make their case even stronger, both justices turned to history, even invoking Magna Carta.
Whoa, Magna Carta. Now we're talking serious legal history. I'm all ears.
Me too. Both Justice Matthews and Justice Harlan dug deep into the historical context of due process, tracing it all the way back to Magna Carta and the idea of law of the land. Remember, Magna Carta was signed back in 1215, limiting the power of the English monarchy and guaranteeing certain rights.
Yeah, it's like a cornerstone of Western legal tradition.
Right, and that's exactly why both justices used it in their arguments about due process. But here's the thing. They used it in totally different ways.
Okay, now I'm really curious. How did these two very different legal minds use the same historical document to support their opposing views on due process?
All right, let's unpack it. Justice Matthews, who, as you recall, was all about flexibility, focused on the fact that legal language and concepts evolve over time.
So even something as old and revered as Magna Carta shouldn't be interpreted in a rigid, literal way.
That's exactly his point. He argued that even the meaning of phrases in Magna Carta, like law of the land, has shifted and broadened over the centuries. And so, he argued, should our understanding of due process of law.
Okay, that makes sense. Laws need to be able to adapt to changing times and circumstances. What about Justice Harlan? I bet he had a different take on Magna Carta.
He did. Justice Harlan, in his dissent, saw Magna Carta not as an example of evolving legal language, but as a testament to the enduring importance of certain fundamental rights. He believed that the right to a grand jury indictment was one of those core rights enshrined in Magna Carta, and it shouldn't be casually tossed aside by states, even in the name of flexibility.
So Justice Harlan is basically saying, hold on, some rights are so fundamental, so deeply rooted in our legal heritage, that they shouldn't be subject to the whims of changing times or interpretations.
You got it. And this clash of interpretations highlights a fundamental tension in our legal system. How do we balance the need for flexibility and adaptation in the law with the protection of essential rights that shouldn't be compromised? It's a question that was fiercely debated in Hurtado v. California and continues to be debated today.
This is making me think about all sorts of contemporary issues where this tension plays out, things like the right to privacy in the digital age or the debate over free speech versus hate speech. It seems like we're always trying to strike that balance between individual rights and the power of the government.
You're right on the money. Hurtado v. California provides a historical lens through which we can view these ongoing debates. It reminds us that the conversation about due process and the protection of individual liberties is an ongoing one, and it encourages us to think critically about where that line should be drawn between flexibility and the preservation of essential rights.
Wow, I'm really starting to see why this case is considered such a landmark decision. It's not just about a legal dispute from the 1880s. It's about grappling with fundamental questions about the nature of justice, individual rights, and the role of the government.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And the story of Hurtado v. California doesn't end there. We still have to explore the lasting impact of this decision and its implications for how due process is understood and applied in the 21st century.
All right, I am ready for more. Let's dive into the legacy of Hurtado v. California and see how it continues to shape our legal landscape today.
So, you know how Justice Matthews argued that due process shouldn't be, like, rigidly tied to specific procedures from the past? Well, he actually pointed to some pretty wild historical practices to illustrate this point.
Oh, really?
Like something called appeals of murder.
Appeals of murder. Okay, now I have to hear more about this. What exactly does that entail?
It sounds like something out of, you know, Game of Thrones or something, but it was a real thing in England, like, centuries ago. Basically, instead of going through a regular trial, someone accused of murder could challenge their accuser to a duel. And the outcome of the duel, often fought to the death, was seen as a divine judgment of guilt or innocence.
Wait, seriously? A trial by combat? Wow, talk about taking due process to a whole new level.
Yeah, it's a far cry from how we think of justice today, right? So that's exactly Justice Matthews' point. He brought up these appeals of murder to show just how much legal concepts have evolved over time. Practices that were once accepted as due process would be considered completely barbaric today.
So he's saying that clinging to outdated procedures in the name of tradition could actually hinder the pursuit of true justice. The law needs to keep pace with, you know, changing societal values and all that.
Right. And remember, Justice Harlan, with his emphasis on upholding fundamental rights, wasn't so quick to dismiss these traditional safeguards.
Yeah, I can see how he'd be concerned about throwing out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. Like, sure, some procedures might be outdated, but others might be crucial for protecting individual rights.
Exactly. And the debate over grand jury indictments was right at the heart of that tension. Harlan saw them as a vital safeguard against government overreach.
It's such a tricky balance, isn't it? On one hand, you don't want the law to be stuck in the past, but on the other hand, you don't want to erode essential protections.
It really is. And this tension is something we still grapple with today. I mean, think about, like, surveillance technology and the Fourth Amendment. What does unreasonable search and seizure mean in the context of, like, our digital lives?
That's a great point. Hurtado v. California might be a case from the 1880s, but the questions it raises are still incredibly relevant to how we think about justice in the 21st century. It's like legal history isn't just about the past, it's about understanding the foundation of the rights we have today.
Exactly. And speaking of history, let's circle back to Magna Carta for a minute. Remember how both justices cited this document to support their completely opposite arguments? It's pretty fascinating, right?
Oh yeah, that was a real head-scratcher. It just goes to show how legal interpretation can be so subjective.
Right, it's like a game of chess. Each side is trying to use these historical precedents and legal principles to support their position.
So let's break it down a bit more. How did each justice use Magna Carta in their arguments about due process?
Well, Justice Matthews, who was all about flexibility, you know, he pointed out that the language in Magna Carta has, in some ways, evolved over time. Like, he focused on the phrase law of the land.
Right, which initially referred to very specific legal procedures, but has taken on a broader meaning over the centuries.
Exactly. And Matthews argued that just as the interpretation of law of the land had broadened, so too should our understanding of due process of law. He didn't think the 14th Amendment locked us into using only those exact procedures that were considered due process back in, like, the 13th century.
Okay, that makes sense. Laws need to be able to adapt to new circumstances and evolving social values. But I'm guessing Justice Harlan had a different take.
He did. In his dissent, Justice Harlan saw Magna Carta not as an example of evolving legal language, but as a testament to the enduring importance of certain fundamental rights. He believed that the right to a grand jury indictment was one of those core rights that shouldn't be messed with no matter how our understanding of due process might evolve.
So it's that classic tension against flexibility versus the preservation of essential rights.
You got it. And it's a tension that's still very much alive today.
Yeah, this is making me think about all sorts of contemporary issues where this tension comes up. Things like the right to privacy in the digital age or the debate over free speech versus hate speech. Mm-hmm. It seems like we're always trying to strike that balance between individual rights and the power of the government.
And that's exactly why Hurtado v. California is such an important case, even though it's over 100 years old. It provides this really valuable historical perspective on these ongoing debates. It reminds us that the conversation about due process and protecting individual liberties is never truly over.
I'm starting to get why this case is considered a landmark decision. It's not just about a legal dispute from the 1880s. It's about grappling with these really fundamental questions about, like, the nature of justice and the role of the government.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And we still haven't even gotten to the legacy of Hurtado. We need to explore how this decision has impacted how we understand and apply due process today in the 21st century.
Okay, I am ready for more. Let's dive into the legacy of Hurtado v. California and see how it continues to shape our legal landscape today. Okay, so the Supreme Court basically said, Stace, you have some leeway in how you handle criminal procedures. But they didn't just give them a blank check, right?
Right. They were very clear that whatever procedures states use, they still have to be fundamentally fair. They can't just, like, throw fairness out the window and do whatever they want.
So it's like they drew a line in the sand. States can experiment, but they can't cross that line.
Yeah.
Did this lead to more legal challenges? I mean, trying to figure out where that line is exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Hurtado v. California set off a whole wave of legal battles. People were constantly arguing over what fundamental fairness really means in practice. And courts had to figure out how to apply the principles of Hurtado to all sorts of new cases and situations.
So this one case about a murder trial in California ended up having this, like, ripple effect throughout the whole legal system.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, right? It shows you just how much impact a single Supreme Court decision can have. It's not just about the specific people involved in the case. It's about shaping the legal landscape for, like, generations to come.
This is making me realize that learning about this stuff isn't just about history. It's about understanding the foundation of our rights today. So how does Hurtado v. California affect us in the 21st century? Like, does this whole flexible approach to due process still hold up?
It's a great question. And honestly, the legacy of Hurtado is kind of complicated. Legal scholars are still debating it today. I mean, on the one hand, it has allowed the legal system to, you know, adapt to new challenges and new technologies, which is important.
But too much flexibility could be dangerous, right? It's like a slippery slope, potentially.
Exactly. That's the tension, right? How much flexibility is too much? I mean, think about the rise of the internet and all the issues surrounding digital privacy. The Fourth Amendment protects us from unreasonable searches and seizures. But what does that mean when it comes to, like, our emails and our online activity? courts have had to grapple with how to apply due process to these totally new and complex situations.
Right. It's like our founding fathers couldn't have imagined the internet when they wrote the Constitution. So how do we apply those principles to a world they never could have foreseen?
That's the challenge. And Hurtado v. California kind of set the stage for that ongoing struggle to balance flexibility with protecting those core fundamental rights.
Okay, so let's bring it all home for our listeners. Why should they care about this case?
Yeah.
How does Hurtado v. California impact their everyday life?
Because the principles of due process are at the heart of how our legal system works. I mean, whether it's dealing with a traffic ticket, a dispute with a landlord, or, you know, something more serious, the right to due process is there to protect you. It ensures that you have certain basic rights, like the right to be notified of charges against you, the right to a fair hearing, the right to an attorney, the right to appeal a decision. These are all things that flow from the idea of due process.
So it's like a safety net, right?
Yeah.
Even if we never find ourselves in a major legal battle, due process is there in the background, making sure the government can't just run over us.
Exactly. And knowing about your rights and how they've been shaped by cases like Hurtado, it kind of empowers you to, you know, navigate the legal system and advocate for yourself.
This has been such an amazing deep dive. We've gone from a murder trial in 1880s California to like the very foundation of our legal system. It's incredible how a case from so long ago can still feel so relevant today.
Yeah, it's a testament to how these legal battles, these debates over fundamental rights, they're never really over. They just keep evolving.
I totally agree. And on that note, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought to chew on. Hurtado revolved around the question of whether states could bypass grand jury indictments. So here's something to think about. Could you be charged with a felony without a grand jury indictment in your state? It's worth looking into.
That's a great point. It might seem like ancient history, but this case can have very real implications for people today. It all comes back to knowing your rights and how the legal system works where you live.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive into Hurtado v. California. Thanks for joining us on this wild ride through legal history.
It was a pleasure.
And to all our listeners, keep those legal minds curious. And remember, knowing your rights is power. We'll catch you on our next deep dive into the fascinating world of law and justice.